We have a guest today. Thank God. I should cut down on Bruce's joke telling. All right, welcome to another episode of the Beer Pinions Podcast. My name is Pat Berger from Kaiser Tiger and Patty Long's. And with me, as always, is Bruce White from the Chicagoland Beer Tours. Bruce, what's up?
Getting doing well, getting ready for my mom's in town this weekend.
Oh, Mother's Day. Yes.
The whole lineup going to be running around town with her. And
I just ordered flowers for my mom. So if you're listening, haven't done something for your mom, do it. Although,
and if you're listening to this after Mother's Day,
you're probably
now
screwed.
Is the apology.
Send a sorry card.
But things are going well. How about you?
Everything is great. You know, weather's finally coming around. Our bi-weekly weather report.
Right.
Weather's coming around. Although it's going to storm this Saturday for our crawfish boil here at Kaiser, but we have a roof now and heaters, so we can't control the weather, but we do what we can, right?
Yeah. I was looking around. You have the some new outdoor seating, it looks like, on the street side as well.
And the front patio's all set up, and the Patty Long's too. People have been enjoying it. It's a little bit outdoors, you know. The city's about ready to go crazy after an extended winter.
Exactly.
And we have a guest today. Thank God. I mean, I should cut down on Bruce's joke telling. With us today is a founder, brewmaster, part owner, grand poobah at Illuminated Brewery, or Illuminated Brew Works, I should say, Brian Buckman. Brian, how are you?
Very good. Thank you for letting me in. I know I got kicked out a few weeks ago, so I appreciate you, putting that to the side and let me back into your establishment.
Did you get kicked out?
No.
Oh,
no.
I would have made a good story.
I can. I mean, I guess I could probably shoot for it today.
I think the only time you've been close to being kicked out of Kaiser Tiger is when you showed up with a flame-throwing popcorn machine.
That's right. That's right. You seemed real excited about it at the time.
I was. I wasn't going to throw you out. It's these managers.
Sure.
Seem to care about safety.
Sure. Well, that was a fun one. We had a whole bevy of people. I think it was like a couple like flaming torches, a flamethrower, and a popcorn machine.
A popcorn machine that shot flames out of the top.
That's right.
Call.
The hell was a popping popcorn.
And a lot of furries.
Some folks in furries, which is the real danger.
Yeah. It was like a flame-throwing furry convention in the beer garden. It was fun.
It was fun.
That was my introduction to Illuminated Brewery.
Did I do drugs? Did this really happen? I feel this is amazing.
You mean ever? Or did you just do drugs?
Did you do drugs today?
I hope so.
No, but I'm like, there's furries, there's flamethrowers, and there's a popcorn machine. This sounds like...
You got to give the people what they want.
I know.
That is how Illuminated rolls, man.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I can't even remember what that was for. Was that...
Don't ask me.
It was furry popcorn.
I think
day.
Ferber was involved somehow.
Yeah. Shout out to Brian Ferber. He was definitely involved. I think you were releasing a beer, I think.
Okay.
Maybe Orange Sunshine.
Was it? It might have been. It might have been. Okay. Yeah.
Sure.
That's exactly what it was.
Yeah.
It was very professionally related.
So, Illuminated Brew Works, why don't you give us a little timeline of how and when you guys started?
Okay, I'll give you the abbreviated version too. But
we got plenty of time. You don't any got version you want.
We first moved into the West Loop, the spot where we're still at, and here in the West Loop in August of 2013, a long time ago. But we it was originally three partners, all self funded. So part of that was we didn't hire a lawyer to do our licensing. And so that was took a little bit longer than probably it should have. So in that interim time when we were waiting,
to be honest, it probably took the exact same amount of time.
maybe.
I mean,
we got a couple sendbacks.
Sometimes
we got a couple
I wonder
sendbacks.
About these lawyers I pay to do these licenses. That doesn't seem to speed things up.
That's definitely true. Yeah. I should have been a lawyer. Is I think the real takeaway from all
we
this.
All should have. Yeah. Been.
As a former lawyer, no, you guys made the right.
That's
call.
Right. Yeah, Bruce is actually a lawyer.
But yeah, so while we were waiting to get licensed, we were brewing out of Una and A. At that time, Jerry was down the street on Hubbard and Palina. So we brewed out of there for about 6 months. And then finally, on our way, there's another Ferber story. On our way to the Hoptacular, driving to the Hoptacular, we got our notice from the state that we were actually legal to sell beer.
Oh.
It's like, good, this is great timing. Yeah. Now this is going to be legal today. So that was October.
Notice that today's activities will actually be legal. Bummer.
Phew. So that was October 2014. And then at that time, we were a little five-barrel brew house. So we had the five-barrel at Jerry's place and then moved it over at our place once we could actually sell legally. And then in about a year after that, we picked up another 15-barrel. At that point, we were all still doing other jobs full-time. And then in 2016, we picked up a couple more 10-barrel fermenters, and then I left my job, and we brought on a couple full-time sales reps. And
I remember you leaving the job. It was glorious.
It was great. It was the best day ever. Yeah. Continues to be. So, yeah, I mean, so we kind of, like, we've been doing it since 2014, but I kind of see, like, our kind of real start date is around May of 2016, which is when I went full-time. We brought on Wally full-time. We now have two more sales reps, and I brought our capacity up to now we're about 75 barrels of fermentation space.
Nice.
So,
yeah. And
go ahead.
I seem to remember, like, when you guys were kind of coming out, probably before you went full-time. Mm-hmm. I mean, you guys are, like, a bootstrap brewery as far as like I seem to remember like photos of like the you guys pouring the cement in your or yeah. Is that right? Like there's a dirt floor and like all that stuff.
So the landlord for our space, it's a great space. He calls the WTF Reserve, and it's kind of this shared space with a bunch of different kind of artists. So there's like a knife maker that does these beautiful knives right next to us. There's a furniture
forged
maker.
In fire.
Forged in fire.
Because that's my new favorite show.
Oh, was he on it? No.
Yeah.
No, I've talked to him about that. He seems like to think that would be a waste of time.
I guess it should be his dream.
I guess it somehow cuts against the grain of his artistic integrity. I don't know.
Does he wear a utility kilt? Because everyone on
Forged
in Fire
does not wear a
does.
Utility kilt, so that might be part of it. Yeah, I didn't want to put on a dress. So.
I do. I love that show. It's a great show. Yeah. I don't know anything about blacksmithing.
But. Yeah, I'll stop by sometime. Yeah, it's pretty rad. He's built out his shop too, and he's got a forge there and all kinds of fun power tools.
Cool.
Yeah, he's a good dude. So he's there. There's a furniture maker. There's a coffee roaster. Abacus Coffee is right down the hall from us. So it's this kind of cool little collective space that then has the kind of the playground next to it that we do our fires at. So when we moved in there, though, the downside of it is that it was super raw. And so we had to, again, we were basically funded by the three partners that started. None of us were lawyers or born with a trust fund or had any kind of meaningful money in any way. So it was a very small startup. I think we put in about 40 grand to get started. And with that, we were able to be producing beer and be selling it at places like Kaiser and, you know, up next to other breweries that spent, you know, 10, 20 times that, you know, to be in the marketplace.
That's awesome. Yeah.
So it's kind of a cool kind of backbone to our whole narrative that I think you kind of see fall through is this kind of this DIY aesthetic that we've kind of, I kind of feel like we've stormed the castle in a certain respect, you know, like we were able to build out our place by hook or crook and get up online and get being sold next to, you know, national and multinational brands and have people pick us over them.
Yeah. I mean, it really is a interesting brewery. I had the pleasure of making a beer with Brian.
That's right.
And everything is handmade.
That's very true.
And, you know, even the heat exchanger was
the heat exchanger. That's actually we stole that idea from Jerry Nelson.
Yeah,
Jerry's got a great
shout out to Jerry.
Yeah, there was a few different breweries that we had worked with. While we were getting our stuff set up, that we saw, like, oh, that's a really good idea, you know. And that's always trying to find ways that we could come in with the least amount of overhead possible, but not sacrifice where it's important. Like, we've got real stainless fermenters that are jacketed and everything, but everything else is pretty much built by us. So Jason built out the brew house. The cooling plate is what we borrowed from Jerry. It's basically like a diesel engine displacement chiller that we can drop. So we rack about 10 barrels at a time, you know, from boil to the fermenter. And it drops from boiling to 70 degrees, like, pretty much instantaneously, as long as it takes to move through that displacement chiller. And that cost us like $150, where I think if you would have bought, you know, what's kind of standard for the industry, it's closer to about $3,000,
yeah,
on the cheap side.
Oh, yeah. Sure. I remember Jason being like, people fucking pay for these things, man. I built this, you know. I mean, the first time I'd ever seen it.
It's true.
But my favorite DIY part of the brewery is the cooler.
The cool bot, yeah.
Yeah, where you actually modified a window AC unit, like the kind that are hanging out of windows, mm-hmm, all over Chicago.
That's right.
And made it blow even colder to get your cooler down to, I mean, it's cold in there. It's what, 40 degrees?
Yeah, it holds between 38 and 40 degrees, depending on the ambient temperature outside.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's this cool thing called the cool bot that this farmer out of Iowa came up with. I think it's about $300 to get the unit, and it basically overclocks your window units. So with like the proper window unit and proper insulation on the space, you have a fully functional cold room. That again, I think for our space, which was like, I think it's probably about 15 by 30 feet. It's pretty big now. We've kind of expanded it over time. We spent about $1,500, I think, all in, and that's for insulation, the wood to build the space out, the two window units, and then the cool bot. So it's just crazy cheap.
Yeah,
crazy.
I mean, cheap. I thought I was cool. Like, you know, I got a big giant cooler here downstairs, and you know, bought it all used, mm-hmm, and had a guy put it together and everything, and I think I got away with it for $10,000.
Okay. Yeah, that's
and
great.
That was cheap.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was a third great. Of the price if yep. I'd bought it new, you know?
And probably 8,000 of that was him installing it.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. For sure.
Yeah.
Awesome. We've got some beers in front of us. We can crack a beer.
Yeah, I'd love to drink a beer.
My mom's got a bottle opener. Now, I want to ask you about the thing that first drew me to your guys' brewery is the imagery.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right. You know, for those that don't know, you know, the Illuminati. I can't reach these beers. Just keep talking on the microphone.
Which one are you going to start
with, Mugwump? It's like, I feel like T-Rex trying to get into these beers. What do we got? Mugwump.
Viscage.
That's right.
Yeah, with an alien on it.
It's a Mugwump. That is a Mugwump. Caught in the wild. Yeah. So Mugwumps were from William Burroughs' novel, Naked Lunch. But I think that image is actually borrowed from the Cronenberg adaptation of Naked Lunch. And they're these weird kind of like reptilian alien creatures that have these protrusions from their head that excrete this mugwump jism that people drink and get addicted to. And it's a nice filthy metaphor for addiction that Burroughs loved. So this is Mugwump Brunch because Naked Brunch was already taken.
I always like that. You ever seen the Simpsons episode when they sneak in to see Naked Lunch at the movie theater?
No.
they walk out and Nelson's mortified, like, yeah. I can think of two things wrong with the title of that movie.
That's good. Oh, man. Cheers, folks.
Cheers. Thank you so much. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's a lot of sort of mystical beatnik imagery. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think it kind of ties into your space, too, because, well, the owner of the space just passed away. I saw that on your
No, someone, don't scare me. You're thinking about Larry Harvey just passed away, who was one of the founders of Burning Man, right?
And then isn't there Burning Man connection to your building?
There is, yeah. So that's how we know Richard. Richard is now one of the regional contacts for Burning Man, but has been a burner for years. And I was the regional contact for Burning Man from 99 to 2007. So we kind of all ran in the same circles, and that's how we came to be aware of Richard, who owns the building.
Oh, okay. You're officially the coolest guest we've had on the podcast.
That's sad. You guys need a new booking agent.
I think Adam Favre's going to be pissed. Yeah.
Sorry, Adam. Sorry.
Take that, Adam.
Yeah, take that. You know, that all sort of also goes into the whole, like these bonfires that you hold.
That's right.
Really have a Burning Man-esque sort of feel to them, a vibe.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I took the time to kind of...
I mean, minus naked people. I've never seen any naked people at your bonfire.
Not at ours, but they're definitely like World Naked Bike Ride Party happens there, and there's plenty of... Unfortunately, naked people.
Not the kind that you're.
No, unfortunately. But hey, it's their thing.
I always feel sorry for the bike seats.
Yeah. It seems like, I mean, just pragmatically, it seems like a horrible idea to ride a bike.
You always
naked.
See that one guy on the divvy. You're like, you know, that's not cool, man.
Did you bring some wipes to at least wipe that thing down?
It's a shared bike.
Yeah.
You know? Anyway. Well, this is good. So I know you guys are sort of a Belgian-inspired kind of Saison brewery, and that's what this beer is to me. It's got a little Brett to it.
No, it does not. It's a kettle sour, right? So that's where you're getting that tartness from. It's actually a kettle sour, your favorite style, double dry hop, double IPA, and then it's got orange juice in it as well.
It's not hazy enough, dude.
I know.
Someone's going to return these bottles.
So I guess we started as focusing mostly on farmhouse styles, and I would say, you know, we used to say that we were Belgian inspired or do urban farmhouses, but I'd say more than even just being like Belgian inspired, I think specifically Fantôme inspired. I mean, that was Danny Prignone and his amazing kind of portfolio of beers was one of the main reasons why I started doing this, and we were always trying to aspire both to his portfolio, or his beers in particular, but also I love the entire kind of attitude that he's brought to his beers, and I love his website. I don't know if you've seen his website. It's this beautifully awful website.
I don't know if I have.
Oh, it's fantastic. It looks like it was probably built with GeoCities in like 1997, and he's got this kind of weird kind of cabal of beer drinkers that hang out at his brewery, and like he's done this great job of kind of creating this mystique that is I think like partially intentional, but then partially just kind of like the result of
just the way he is,
his own eccentricities.
Yeah.
And so that was a huge inspiration for us, and that was kind of I saw his farmhouse style beers, and basically I saw that as like a license to just do whatever the hell you want to do. Right. You know, you can frame it inside of this idea like, well, there's a Pilsner base, and there's, you know, there's a protein in there, and there's, you know, there's this idiosyncratic yeast strain, so it's a farmhouse, right? But then inside of that you can kind of extrapolate that and pull that into all kinds of different branches off that tree.
It's certainly what attracts a lot of people to craft brewing, is that a lot of these breweries really are an extension of the brewers themselves.
Yeah.
You know, and you guys definitely fall into that category.
And I always kind of have thought about you guys as kind of a little more underground and a little more, way more personality than kind of most breweries do. I don't know how intentional that is, but it seems like
I'd love to not be underground.
Yeah.
I'm really trying to get above the goddamn ground.
No, but I think it works in your favor in a sense of like, it's a cool brand. Like that's when I think of Illuminated, I'm like,
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Like, and I'm not trying to blow smoke. It's just, I think one of the more unique brands, certainly in the city.
It's deeply personal. I mean, that's for sure. I mean, it's Matt and I, Matt's the business manager. We've done projects together for years, both before we started going to Burning Man, and then Burning Man was a big kind of centerpiece for projects that we'd worked on together. But we've done all these different projects, and they've all been, you know, the same kind of idea of like, you know, this DIY kind of like of our own design. So when we started talking about making a brewery, like, it didn't really even, like, it's because I'm kind of ignorant, I think, didn't even make sense to me that, like, someone would start a brewery and not be the brewer or not make, you know, not make the beer or, yeah. You know, like, why would you do that? It didn't even make any sense to me. So, like, when we started, we're like, well, yeah, of course we're going to be the brewers and we're going to have this be, you know, it's not going to be designed by a marketing team or probably be condoned by a marketing team in any sense. You know, there's probably going to be some bad ideas that are done that are very much our own. But at the end of the day, they're ours, you know, and that helps us to kind of keep going to work every day. But then it also, I think it ultimately translates through into the product, right? That there's something there that's a little bit more, I mean, authentic is kind of a slippery word, but I think it's somewhat appropriate there. Like it is clearly of our hearts, you know, and I think that's important in this world that is more and more seems to be abstracted into kind of garbage market built consumption.
Yeah. Where, you know, it's, you know, nothing's coming from the creators. It's all coming from a focus group.
That's right. That's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's been rigorously tested. And
that's really, you know, it's a pitfall in every business, but it's one that I think craft beer is going through right now because it's getting big and there's mm-hmm. money and there's investors and there's, if you want to grow, mm-hmm. You have to kind of succumb to all of those things, right? I don't know if anybody's really, you know,
immune
significantly. Yeah. I don't know if anyone's immune. I used to say Lagunitas was, you know, really doing a great job of getting big and retaining their persona, and then they sold to Heineken.
Right. I haven't talked to anybody from Lagunitas recently, but my understanding is it's still a good place to work.
And I would still say that they, you know, still do a great job. They still make great beer and all the rest of it, but it's hard for me to use them as the example. Right. Now that Tony's a billionaire and you don't really hear much from him anymore, but you know,
why would you?
I know
he's on the island.
Yeah. I'm waiting to get to that island. Yeah. Billionaire island. Which where way we all that? Sell out island. I'm taking offers. But, you know, I mean, the same thing happened on a small scale with, you know, Patty Long's. You know, if you ever go in there, I mean, it really is an extension of me. It's like mine and Chris's rec room, you know?
The clubhouse.
Yeah. Right. And we knew we couldn't do that with Kaiser Tiger. We couldn't find 600 people who all want to hang out in our clubhouse.
Right.
So we had to make it a little, you know, I don't know, more appealing to masses, right?
But you still brought your signature to it, which I think is always that's the real challenge, and that's kind of the fun part sometimes.
We certainly did. Yeah. And you know, that's all you can do, I guess, you know.
Yeah.
You can't control everything on a large scale either. You can on a small scale. You
really?
Know. Ketchup. You can let it control you anyway. Maybe you can't. I don't know.
Control is controlled by its need to control. How about that? That's a little nod to Mr. Burroughs. That's one of his famous quotes.
I like it.
So backtracking just a little bit further, what kind of got you into craft beer? Like how, or beer in general? Like how, when did the first start?
I think I went on a vacation with my dad and my uncle when I was in like fourth grade and had my first beer.
Yeah.
And then, you know, garage hopped beers when I was too young to be buying it myself. I'm not proud of that, but it did happen. And then
it a couple times.
It's exciting. Right?
There's always someone's parents I knew too, you know?
Yeah. Your children are awful. Kids are teenagers in particular.
Children are terrible people.
Our future is full of terrible people. I just, you know, it was a love for beer and intoxicants and just fun, really, really a constant search for joy and elevating life from being a boring, menial task to something enjoyable. And that kind of found its way to, I think, probably around 2002, 2003, I kind of got initiated into better beer through Shannon from, he was over at Small Bar at that point over on Division.
Oh, Big Shannon?
Yeah, Big Shannon.
Yeah, shout out to Big Shannon.
So he would kind of feed me beers. I think Clint was another bartender there that would kind of feed me beers. Like, try this, you know. And about that same time, I started going over to the Map Room and having great beer there. Yeah. And then Chicago kind of finally gave up and decided to be a good beer town about 2006,
yeah,
2007. And then, yeah, then it all kind of, and then I got a kegerator and then it spiraled out of control. So
were you homebrewing before you guys opened?
Yeah. Yeah. So that's kind of like when I think I got a kegerator in like 2005, 2006, and then started homebrewing shortly after that. So Matt still is, he's the president of this catering company here in Chicago, called Northern Fork, and they had at that time they had an industrial kitchen over at like Chicago and Milwaukee, and we were on a fishing trip and trying to come up with something new to do, some new fun project, and we're like, let's make beer, right? Why not? And so we were able to go to his industrial kitchen and do all grain brewing and not worry about the mess, not worry about any of the infrastructure concerns that we might have had if we were actually legitimately making it out of our apartment or our house. But real quickly after we started doing that, it was like the switch was flipped. And
you kind of got,
No, there was definitely all the things there that kind of blew my hair back. And so it got out of control pretty quickly. The habit escalated. So that we had to start selling it in order to support the habit.
Yeah. That's awesome.
I see cans here. You guys canning?
Yes, sir. This, we released this. So Orange Sunshine was actually our first commercially made beer that we made over at Jerry's place when Dustin was still there back in 2014. And so as we started to move into the can format, we thought that Orange Sunshine, which has kind of been our flagship for our existence, that'd be the right beer to start with in cans as well. Plus it's a great crusher. It's perfect
for the summertime.
Summertime, yeah. And what's better than a can to, you can smash into your head after you drink it, right?
Did the powers that be give you any guff over the name?
Sometimes not that don't. Name, yeah. they've given us plenty of guff about a bunch of other ones, and I was very paranoid about that. But no, they didn't get the reference.
Sometimes it
thank Christ
helps to be cooler than them.
Yes, yeah.
For those listening, Orange Sunshine is a kind of acid, right? LSD.
That's right. That's right. The Brotherhood of Eternal Love was this kind of like cult of kind of ex like mafia thugs that had gotten turned on to LSD, and they all went from being these like, you know, shit kickers to like these hippies, but they still had their their criminal instincts. So they wound up
hippies have anyway.
sure So they took their entrepreneurial instincts and created some of the most, you know, storied LSD of the history of LSD, and had kind of there's a great book, I think it's called Orange Sunshine, that tells the story of them and just the madness that was going on down there in Southern California. And Tim Leary was living there for a while and was before he went to Algiers, you know, before he went to prison and then had to escape to Algiers. But it's an amazing story of
that's what the Merry Pranksters were tripping on, wasn't it?
Orange Sunshine? That and the what's his name? Owsley Stanley's acid too. So there was two main producers of like high quality LSD in the 60s, and it was Owsley Stanley, who was up in San Francisco and working with the Grateful Dead, and I think had built their initial wall of sound with money that he had made from that LSD, and then the Orange Sunshine, which was being made down in Southern California, and then seeding its way across this fine nation.
There's our acid history lesson.
The first for the podcast. I love it.
Yeah, come for the beer, stay for the LSD. Beer opinions.
Oh, man. But you know, and I, props to you guys. I was saying, like, I've seen it. So if you're listening, you know, especially Chicagoans, you can definitely find it around town.
All over, yeah. We were very humbled to be Josh Knoll just just picked us as the beer of the month
for
May. Yep. That got printed yesterday, I believe.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so he did a real nice write-up, and that was very, very flattering and very surprising.
His book just came out. I have not...
I haven't read the book
yet. I haven't read it either.
Yeah.
So we probably shouldn't talk about it.
Right. Never mind.
Let's all talk about a book we've never read.
but yeah. So that happened, and I think your question was where you can get it. So pretty much anywhere. The Binnie's, Beer Miscuous, Bottles and Cans, Beer Temple, obviously. Any place where you can, any good beer bottle shop in Chicago. Madison Vine Wines right here up the street. Noble Grape. So all those places.
That's awesome.
And you can always go onto our website at ibw-chicago.com/get/illuminated. And that's got like a map. You can kind of choose what region or what area you're looking in. It'll tell you who carries our beer, either bottle shop or restaurant or bar. And then also lists it out if you're averse to maps.
For those map averse people listening.
Cool. Yes.
What was I going to say? I don't remember. Bruce, save me.
All right.
Come to my rescue.
I was going to come back. I did want to touch a little bit more on the branding and marketing just because it's really cool. And it kind of reminds me, and I think I was reading a little bit online about a vestige to some of these secret organizations. It's like Illuminated, Illuminati. I don't know if there's anything like that.
Sure. Yeah. I mean,
you can't talk about that.
I can't expound too much on that. But yeah, I mean, you know, there's a bunch of different ways I can answer that. But the easiest way is that I have a very strong affinity towards turn of the century fraternal organizations. I love the iconography. And I love all the mystery more than anything that's packed into that, you know, that like it, I love that it raises a lot of questions, some good questions, some stupid questions, but it raises a lot of questions and doesn't answer too many, you know? So I think that's a fun, kind of bomb to put into people's heads, you know, where you give them a lot of ways that they can go and you don't give them any end of the story. And I think that's what we try to do always with our labels. And that's what it's fun to play with the fraternal organizations, the eye and the triangle, you know, that's this ubiquitous symbol. But nobody really, I mean, everybody's has an idea where it came from or what it stands for, but most people's idea about that are wrong. And there's as many, histories of it as there are, opinions about those histories. But yeah, so we have fun. We have fun.
The fun of Discordianism, right?
That's right. That's right. The Operation Mindfuck.
Yes. If I was a religious man, I would be a Discordian, I think.
Sure, sure. You don't have to be, though.
Right.
You don't
have to be. That's kind of the point of Discordianism.
That's right. Yeah.
It's kind of like Scientology, except Discordian.
Not as expensive.
Yeah, not as expensive. And they acknowledge it's all fake.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's a fun one, and it's definitely been something that's piqued my interest and kind of propelled me down strange pathways my entire life, you know, starting probably with the very famous Illuminatus trilogy, Robin Anton Wilson book, and all the rest of his books I love. And
yeah, those certainly grabbed me in college and are a fun read. It's almost like L. Ron Hubbard if he
had a sense of humor.
Yeah, if he had a sense of humor and didn't take himself seriously at
all.
That's
right.
You know?
That's right. Yeah, which I think is probably the, you know, of all the, I have a slight preoccupation with like trying to find a religion is the right thing, but like a philosophy that makes sense in the world. And I think the one thing that most of them, or almost all of them, except for Discordianism or the Church of Subgenius, all of them tend to miss this, but these guys have a sense of humor about themselves, which is like, if you're going to get through this world at all, I think the only imperative is to have a sense of humor about it. Otherwise, you're going to be fucking miserable.
Right, yeah.
Religion. You might still be miserable, but...
Does humor belong in religion? I think it does.
I think it does, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the...
It's severely lacking in most of them.
Seems to be.
I love it, man. This is not only the coolest podcast, it's the deepest one too.
Oh, it's very deep tonight. It's very deep.
We can keep getting deeper.
Yeah.
We should open another beer.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. And let's get back to the beer. So We should mention that you guys are making a lot of double dry hops, Northeast IPAs.
That's right.
And
your favorite?
My favorite. I love it.
Okay, all right. Good.
You know,
got good cop, bad cop here.
Fruit Slave is one of the ones I like. Mm-hmm. I do like that beer. Yeah, it tastes good.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. The spoonful of sugar.
Uh-huh.
Yeah,
then you'll like this guy. You're okay. He's about to open the astronaut ice cream, which is another. It's a lactose double dry hop double IPA. So I assume your next question is be like, so why did you start doing that? Or Is that where you're going with that?
Sure. Why'd you start doing that?
much to my chagrin, right? You know, but like when we started, it was a stupid hang up, but it was a hang up that I was like, there's no way I'm going to make an IPA. Like there's so many IPAs in the market. And I frankly just didn't care for them either. Cause I don't like bitter at all. Like I have a real, real issue with bitter. And so I swore up and down and that was going to be one of our earmarks is that we're the brewery that doesn't make any hoppy beers, you know? And we did that and I enjoyed it. And I think we did a great job of putting beers in front of people that had them. Is that a little hazier?
Yeah, and this fucker's cloudy.
Yeah.
this is what I'm talking about. I'm so excited. Thank you.
Man. Cheers, buddy.
Cheers.
Oh yeah. I've officially got the haze craze.
Smells like a bag.
I love
weed.
It too.
Not that I would know what that smells like. I mean, in this podcast, that's not a big admission, you know. Weed is nothing here.
My,
that's true. Let's talk about heroin. How do you feel about heroin, Pat?
Heroin's bad.
Won't touch it anymore.
Bad people.
Yeah, it is bad.
Oh man.
Yeah, you know, I don't know. This is not. I don't like this as much as Fruit Slave.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Is there a difference in the bitterness?
Well, there's the lactose sugar is gonna make it a little sweeter and little. Even less beer-like, I guess, would be the best way to say it. And to put it in the parlance that you would understand.
This beer is your worst nightmare, and I love it.
I do like, you know.
Not nothing.
It does amuse me that, like, the biggest selling point to Northeast IPA is the fact that it doesn't taste like beer.
I mean, that's the cold truth that you have to admit or not admit, depending on where you fall on lying to yourself. But, yeah, I mean, it's really... I mean, I love these. I do. But it's definitely not beer, or at least not what I grew up thinking was beer, you know. But that was also what I liked about sours when I first started drinking sours, is that it totally rewired. I remember the first time I had a Cantillon, it was like, it didn't make any sense to me at all. And that was so exciting. You know, it was like, now there's this whole new context that I can explore with beer. And I think in a lot of ways, this is like that as well. It's not quite as far off as, you know, those kind of, you know, acidic, sours. But it is, it's a very different, answer to beer, both from a mouthfeel, from a look. I mean, it's anathema. Like we've been making crummy, hazy beers our entire time because we're unfiltered and largely unskilled, you know. But like, it wasn't until like a year ago that you could like not be ashamed of those, and now people demand it.
Well, I know, and now it's like you've made a mistake if it doesn't come out cloudy.
That's right. It's crazy.
Your time has come.
Fucking world's upside down.
The whole world is on its ear, Pat.
Oh my god. Trump's America. I don't know what to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, and for those of you at home who can't see it, I mean, it is as hazy as it gets. It looks like orange juice, and it's 8%.
It looks like and pulpy orange juice.
I tell you what, the alcohol, maybe I'm getting a little more now on the after, but it is hidden pretty well in there.
Yeah, I think we do pretty good with that. I think that's one of the things that we do well is we're able to do kind of higher gravity beers that don't get super hot. Like, don't bash you over the head, and I'm pretty proud of that. Yeah.
How strong is this beer?
Is 8%.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
It definitely hides it.
Yeah. And I mean, this is a breakfast beer if I've ever had it.
For sure.
This is great.
For sure.
I'm loving it. Thank you.
And the Mugwump brunch, too. The Mugwump is designed for breakfast. But yeah, this one works, too.
It's part of a balanced breakfast.
That's right.
A bowl of cereal.
As long as you don't need,
short stack.
Don't need to drive.
And a Mugwump brunch.
That's right.
That's awesome.
But yeah, we were kids. They show that a balanced breakfast, and there was like five things in front of the kid. It was like, Mom, how come you're not making me five things every morning?
And it was all like sugary cereal. Yeah, sugary. How? What's balanced about this?
Pure sugar. Pure sugar.
A glass of milk and a glass of orange juice. Uh-huh.
Sure.
Why not?
Have you found that any particular styles of beers are selling, ones that you're making are selling more than others?
Yeah. Nice. Yeah. I mean, that's okay. So that was the story that I was going to tell. So it was like, I was very adamant and had very strong ideas about not doing anything hoppy. And there was reasons behind that, both from like a personal preference to also just like, there's plenty in the market. The market doesn't need anymore. Wally, our fantastic head of sales, our main sales rep, there's Wally, Jim, and Lucas. But Wally was always hammering at me to like to do a New England IPA, doing an England. I was like, no, I don't want to. We did Brainwash, and he kept trying to tell us to call that because that's hazier. Trying to call that a New England IPA, and I was like, I don't want to do that. But then last year, Forbidden Root did for Craft Beer Week did their any IPA tap takeover, and they're doing it again this year too.
Yeah.
And so that came up, and I was like, fuck it. I don't know if I can swear on this podcast.
Yeah, okay. Fucking right.
Now that I've already sworn about three dozen times. Yeah, I was like, fuck it. Let's do this thought experiment.
No dump button on the beer pan.
Okay.
We can talk
swear away.
Heavy drugs, but no swearing.
Perfect.
Heroin is bad.
It's truth right there. Yeah. So yeah, I was like, let's do this. Let's try it. It'll make Wally happy, and it'll be a fun exercise. And then we made Bulgakov for that, and turned out real good. And Bulgakov, named for the author of The Master and Margarita, one of the greatest books in the world, right? But that also was HOPF. We respelled it because we do Hasselhoff and Bulgakov. Rachmaninoff is stupid, like naming standard that we came up with. So we did Bulgakov, and it went over very well. And the bottles sold like an embarrassingly large amount quicker than anything we'd put on the market before. And so at that point, you know, you're running a business and you're an asshole if you see that and don't respond to it. It's true. Know?
Yeah. I certainly don't blame anyone for selling beer, you know.
Yeah,
I mean, you gotta give the kids what they want, you know.
That's for sure, you know. And it's and so then the decision was like, well, okay, are we gonna do this? It's like, yeah, you got to, you know, if it's selling that well, then you make it, you know. We're running a business. So then the challenge was at that point to kind of like keep it in a
your own.
That's right, in a way that we felt was true to what we care about, and keep the branding right, and you know, keep it interesting. And it has, I think it has been interesting. I mean, one of the things, like I remember having this really kind of bitchy and pretentious conversation with Maddie Colston from, who used to be with Parachute. He's not there anymore. Like right around that same time, being like, I don't want to make beer. I want to find some new beverage that, you know, that's new and more compelling and more interesting to make than beer. And like, and so his suggestion was there's this kind of I can't remember the name of it now, but it's like a Korean alcohol that's like kind of milky. I don't know if you know what I'm talking about. It's great. It's like, but
as
it's
long
like,
as it's not made with spit, I'm fine with it.
I mean, who's to say? Who's to say?
Yeah, that spit beer, I can't. can't even watch that video.
It's always the old ladies, right?
Yeah.
Yuck. That just made it worse. It went from spit to old lady spit.
Yeah, I had some down in Peru.
Yeah.
Got it in a back alley. Felt like I was buying hard drugs, but it was 3.5% beer.
Yeah. Getting the back alley grandma spit, huh? Yeah. How was it?
It's pretty tangy.
Well, you know, there's, I don't know if you guys have had pulque. Pulque is a great, great drink from Mexico that you can't really get outside of that kind of Jalisco area. But that is at least apocryphally, I would assume, but maybe not. Sorry, I keep fiddling with the coasters. At least apocryphally, it is said that fermentation is generally started on the pulque with goat turds, like socks full of goat turds. And that's kind of the bacterial engine to pulque.
Frankly, I would rather have goat turds than old lady spit.
Yeah, goats are much more adorable than old ladies.
That Philadelphia fan that ate the horse poo, I bet he would love that beer.
Oh, I don't know anything about that.
You don't, oh,
no.
Yeah, I saw that video.
Of course, Google a Philadelphia fan.
Yeah, I know. They're savages.
If any of them support a stereotype.
If any of them are listening, clean your shit up. Like, it's terrible.
Literally.
Yeah. Oh,
God. But yeah, so what? So I was kind of like itchy and trying to find something new that was compelling and people hadn't done. And what I've come to discover is like kind of we researched and dug deeper into this style, is that it really has completely, at least for us personally, it's almost entirely changed our process of production. We don't do any hot side hops at all. So everything is first wort hop or flame out or after it's dropped to 170. No hops at all during the boil. We also don't boil very long. We boil for about 20 minutes, which is crazy. It kind of flies against general consensus on evading or eliminating DMS.
Right.
When we do a Pilsner-based one, we boil a little bit longer, but we don't do the 60 to 90 minute recommendation on that either. So it's a very short boil. There's no hop additions that happen during it. And so it's a completely different, really almost completely different way to produce beer than we've done before, and that's kind of exciting, and it's American born, which is pretty cool too. For that we have bourbon that lends to the kind of the world's pedigree of spirits, and now we've got these kind of double dry hop double IPAs that add something finally to the world of beer other than shitty macro beers.
Yeah, there aren't a lot of pure American styles when it comes to beers.
Styles, but there's production methods. Yeah, yeah. I'm saying more the production method than the style.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
That is something that's completely born here.
Yeah, I guess so.
That's my pitch, all right?
I bought it. I love it. Yeah.
Moving on. I don't know. I don't want to be like, the grump who,
I think it's valuable to be the grump against, I mean, especially like this, I mean, I'm not going to look a gift horse in the mouth, but like, yeah, I mean, like our big sellers these days are these and, what we're calling white stouts, which are not stouts at all. But they're definitely fall more under that kind of the pastry stout kind of thing. That's what you're saying. And I'm proud of them. I'm super proud of everything we make. And I'll stand behind it. But like, I think it's good to push back on that. Cause it's not beer. I mean, it is beer, but it's not beer, And I think there needs to be a voice for people to maybe jump in with these, but then take a serious study into, this beverage that's been around, with us for longer than, 2 weeks.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm softening on the whole thing. And,
I think I'm hardening up on it all of a sudden.
I know. Yeah.
Are you going to come with me to Forbidden Root and do the, the New England tap takeover?
No.
You're not softening up that much.
Yeah, I'm not, not jello.
Michael, you're crazy here.
Yeah. But, we occasionally put one on tap here and, and they fly out the door. I don't want to poo-poo anyone's, efforts I don't want to stifle creativity. So I think but I do want to be a stalwart for, tradition.
Yeah. I think that's important.
And, someone has to be. So I've stopped hating on them. I got in trouble on Facebook recently because, I was trying to be funny, It doesn't always carry
humor,
over.
Humor doesn't exist in that world.
I know. But it was Josh Noel's page, and he was talking about how it's now a style. And these brewers were worried that their beer would drop clear before the judging because you have to send it to GABF a couple weeks in advance.
Yeah.
And I was like, what, what world are we living in?
Through the looking glass, man.
That suddenly brewers are now concerned that their beer is going to be too clear for the judges.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's bonkers.
Yeah. It is bonkers. I did judge this style recently at BTI and kept myself very impartial about it. Mm-hmm. Tried to compare them to other Northeast IPAs. And, you know, I get it. I don't know. It's, I don't know. You know, we banned this topic for a long time on the podcast.
Yeah, okay.
Well, it's back now.
Glad to bring it back.
I know. Nice job, Brian.
This is the best day I've had in a while. Thanks.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah. Now, kind of, one quick question just for Chicago Craft Beer Week, now Illinois Craft Beer Week, the rebrand, starts. And so I just want to get
the
shit.
When's that start?
I think it starts next week. Friday. Yeah. May
18th?
Yeah.
19th?
19th, 18th. I think. Or 18th.
Something like that.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And Beer Under Glass is on a Friday for the first time.
Yeah.
And so, you know, do you have any events coming up for that or any things you want to point out?
Yeah. Yeah. We've got a good number, probably most of which I'm not going to remember right now, but I'll
do it.
So obviously there's Bug, on the 19th, the Saturday is Ultra Fresh 2. And that's
The Hop Review. Is that
Hop Review and Lou Dog that does their thing. We did that last year. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah. That's a cool premise. It's like 5 days or less.
Yeah. The freshest beer that you got. And it's an interesting space, over by the Kennedy and Fullerton. There's this little sign making shop that is kind of back at. It's an interesting space. Sunday we've got something and I can't remember what the hell it is. Tuesday we've got a bonfire at our place.
Yes, a bonfire. That's Craft Beer Week.
That's affiliated. Right. Yeah. So and that's gonna be brewer side. It's gonna be us, Low Res, Old Irving Brewing, Burnt City, and Around the Bend are bringing beer. Kaiser Tiger has graciously offered to supply sausages.
Yeah. I'm showing up at the meat.
He's the hero of the day. And then we've got...
I know, the beer is more important, let's face it.
It's a heady mix.
It's an important
balance to hold. And then, Los Cochinos y Los Pistoleros is playing, as well as the Columbines. And anybody that's been to our fires before will recognize the Columbines. They're amazing kind of husband and wife duo. The husband plays this baritone guitar, and the wife, Julia, plays drums. And they do this kind of like garage rockabilly psychedelia kind of thing. That's awesome. And Cochino y Los Pistoleros does kind of old country and mariachi music.
Awesome.
And that's Tony Mojica is the singer for them, who is also assistant brewer at the shop right now.
Oh, cool.
That's Tuesday. So in order to go to that, it's a private event. So you have to be part of our email list, and you have to RSVP. So get signed up on our email list. The information on that will go out probably Sunday, the 20th.
I'm sure you can do that on your website.
That's right. At the first page on the website, you'll see where you can sign up for the email list. So that email will go out probably on Sunday, and the first about 200, 250 people that RSVP will get in. And it's like all of our fires, it's all free. It's free beer, free food, free music, free bonfire. Beautiful view of the city. And it's really,
it is a unique space. It's really great.
It's really cool.
There's nothing else like in the city. I mean, I'm biased, but
I agree.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's awesome.
So it's worth checking out, I think.
Very cool.
And then we've got the NEIPA takeover on Thursday. And I think the thing on Saturday. Oh, and also on Thursday, we've got actually a few things on Thursday. I think there's a thing at Old Irving that they're doing. A thing. That's as much information as you're going to get from me on that. There's also the Northwest Side bar crawl that Clint from Lake Effect puts together. We're doing that again. And then I don't know if I should say this, but I will, because they put a lot of work into it. Most importantly, on Thursday, and especially for people that aren't in Chicago, Sovereign out in Plainfield is doing a really cool beer dinner pairing with us.
Sweet.
They've already done some pretty interesting stuff with it, and the marketing that they've been doing for it has been very, very fun. They're doing like a lot of like menus that are redacted and being very clandestine about everything. It's really cool.
Yes.
So that's Thursday also, and then whatever the end of the week thing is.
Yeah, they have like that new beer fest, I think, at Theater on the Lake or whatever.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, Cletus's place.
Yeah. So that'll be cool.
That's a neat spot too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't checked it out yet. I hear it's cool.
It's cool. Yeah, yeah. We did the hot dog, the Brazil hot dog festival there.
Yes,
the
I was supposed to be at that.
It was fun.
Something came up. Yeah.
That was fun. That was fun. I hope they do that again.
Good. Yeah. Good. Excellent. Craft Beer Week.
Craft Beer Week, there it is.
Yeah, we are not doing anything at Kaiser for Craft Beer Week. No. I just, you know, I feel like we do Craft Beer Week every week
every
here.
Day.
Yes, every day. And so the events are, you know, too much. But I am doing one at Patty Long's.
Awesome.
So we do the same night as Bug, we do something called Butt.
Oh, right. That's right.
Beer
Under
10. Isn't
Metro involved in that?
They are. Yeah, they're talking a lot of shit online. So every year we do a little boot race.
Okay. Right.
Between us, Metropolitan Brewery, and Off Color Brewery. Mm-hmm. And after us dominating first few years, they started practicing, which I consider cheating.
Yeah.
And it's
denigrating the form a little bit.
It is. Yeah. It is. And then last year, I feel like they just outright cheated because their anchorman's shirt was so wet he had to change.
Oh, okay. Yeah. You can't wear it more than you.
You know, I feel like he spilt more than he drank.
Okay.
But that has not stopped them from talking tons of smack online. And, you know, I feel like there is a belt involved, like a wrestling style belt, and I think it's staying at Patty Long's this year. I feel
you
thirsty.
Heard it. You heard it here first.
That's right. Have I been practicing? No, I've just been living my life, which is probably as much
practice
as anyone can expect. So that is our big craft beer event. What does the Chicagoland Beer Tours have anything going on?
I tell you what, every year it comes around and every year I'm just too... I feel like I get stressed out because I feel like you need to have a good event. Like I feel like what happened in the first few years...
Yeah, that's why I keep screwing up.
Yeah, the first few years of the Craft Beer Week, although it's gotten, I think, better, is that... You know, everybody would just be like, oh, we're doing a tap takeover.
Yeah.
A little, I hate to say it, a little lazy. You know, it's cool, but like, if you're going to do an event, I like the events to have something unique that you're doing something that doesn't happen really that often. So I'm really liking like the events you kind of rattled off. Those are all great events. Patty's will be fun.
Oh yeah.
And so like, I don't have anything. We do have our tours, so you can kind of tee it off in the afternoon doing our tours, learning about Chicago and beer, and then go to some of these cool events too. So
tell me, I don't know anything about your tours.
Oh, really? Yeah. So I'm a laid off lawyer.
Okay.
And so I took a part-time job leading food tours.
Okay.
And so Chicago Food Planet, shout out. They're awesome. You combine Chicago history and food tastings.
Okay,
so
cool.
It's kind
that
of
sounds great.
Walking tours. So
okay.
It's different than just kind of sitting on a bus. You know,
for
you
sure.
Get to explore the neighborhoods. And so when I was laid off, I did that for a year. And then I'm like, you know, I love beer more. And I live 2 minutes away from Patty Long's.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so I talked to the owner. I'm like, do you mind if I do this concept with beer? And he kind of gave me his blessing. Pat was the first person I talked to. And I'm like, Pat, do you mind if I bring people in here and we're going to do these groups and we're going to pay and we'll do these beer and bacon pairings? Because that's like one of my favorite.
That doesn't sound like anything he'd be into.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. And Pat was like, yeah, bring him on in. So thank you. And literally the first person I asked. And then kind of compile the tour. So we combined history. I think history is really the kind of not so secret sauce because it's not just about the beer.
Mm-hmm.
But the beer is, we obviously taste beer, talk about beer. And the beer on the tour that we serve has just gotten better and better because we're relying on the tap lists that our establishments have. It's less brewery focused just because we're in these walkable areas. Although I really would love to do tours now and incorporate more breweries. So I'm working on that, but that's kind of the idea in different parts of the city.
They're starting to be kind of organically growing up different corridors and breweries. Yeah.
Yeah. The West over here in the West side. And then,
that's right.
And then I would say up on the North at Malt Row and
Ravenswood.
And then some other areas as well. Pilsen kind of is now
for sure.
That kind of collection. So it's definitely on the radar.
And Bruce, where can people go to sign up for these beer tours?
www.chicagobeerexperience.com.
Yeah. Oh, interesting. Good.
Yeah. Thank you for teeing me up.
Sure,
I appreciate that.
I was earnestly interested, but
And then I do my. I could talk forever. Yeah.
Seamless into the shameless plug segment.
Yeah. Thank you. I didn't even mean to. I was trying to talk about the craft beer week, but you did an awesome job, and I mean you hit your.
I'm working for you, man.
Yeah, he's here for you.
You hit on like most of the great events of the week, so it's perfect.
Cool. Yeah. All right. Well, Brian, thank you so much for coming, telling the story of Illuminated. I'm sure our listeners are intrigued and beguiled by the brand.
Good.
And I know I have been since day one, and I love what you guys do.
Thank you very much.
Bruce, thanks for everything you do, of course. You're really the glue that keeps all this together.
You heard the eye roll there, I think.
And to our listeners, go out there and drink some Illuminated beer. Tell your friends about the Beer Opinions podcast. Go to beeropinions.co and
leave
a review on iTunes, all that kind of fun stuff. And we will wrap with you next time. Thanks, everyone.
Rock and roll.
Thank you.